Welcome back to The Short Coat, a podcast by and for the students at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. Classes have just started again at the college, and that means a new class of students has joined us for what promises to be a whirlwind of a semester. Over the next few weeks, students will be adjusting to the new demands placed on them by this intense experience we call medical school. We'll hear from some of the first years, who we caught up with during the college's annual student organization fair, about whether they're freaking out or just ready to get on with it. Then we'll take note of the sizable portion of medical students who might not have studied the sciences before. How will they get through the massive amounts of very unfamiliar information heaped upon them? We gathered together a group of these so-called non-traditional students to talk about their experiences coming into medical school. Finally, we'll hear a new feature on the show, the Medical Student Government Update. Stay tuned. So what are you least concerned about for medical school?
I actually think I'm least concerned, I guess comparatively with some people that I've talked about, with figuring out a way to study and get everything in, because I have, I don't know, I guess maybe I'm being a little too optimistic.
Well, I mean, obviously you rock then. I mean,
it's... No, it's just I came out of biomedical engineering, which was the most strenuous thing at our school, and I was fine and managed to still have everything I wanted in my life other than that.
Having too much free time.
I would have to agree, and cell biology, because that was my major in undergrad.
I am least concerned about making it through medical school, I suppose, because everyone, once you get in, everyone's just so helpful, and your professors are really there to help you out, so I know that eventually I'll have my MD.
I'm least concerned about having a support group. I've been meeting people here, and I see that everybody's really connected, so I think that's really nice to kind of come in and feel like you're welcome into a family.
Okay, so what are you most concerned about as you start med school?
I guess I'm concerned about not knowing what to be concerned about.
But maybe the advantage is that, you know, you're a clean slate. You're not overly concerned about one thing or another, and so you're able to react.
Maybe it's good. Maybe I'm a bright-eyed, naive beginning med student, and that's the way to be.
I think I'm most concerned about adjusting the amount of work that it's going to be compared to undergrad. I think I'll be able to do it. I think it'll just be a big adjustment from undergrad.
Getting enough sleep.
I'm probably most concerned about keeping enough time for myself with things that I used to love doing.
Like what?
I love music, so I used to sing in an acapella. I play a variety of instruments, and like I'm not sure if I'll actually have time to really keep up with all that, so I'm most concerned about that.
I think I'm most concerned about balancing med school with other outside life activities.
Do you think you're actually going to have a life outside of med school?
I don't really know what to expect.
You have no opinions yet.
No opinions. I got to figure out kind of how to balance it. And I've been talking to the older students, and they say it's kind of individual, but you want to get yourself involved early and make it work.
My largest concern with entering medical school is the change. I haven't been in school for a couple of years because I've been teaching. So getting back in the groove of studying for all of my classes is probably my biggest concern.
What were you doing before this?
Teaching high school chemistry.
I'm Abby Stuck-Marcel. I'm a fourth-year medical student, and I was a religious studies and global health major as an undergrad.
My name is Sarah Averill. I'm a second-year resident at the University of Iowa in the radiology department, and my background was in social sciences and in fine art before I decided to go back to medical school.
My name is Mbechi Irundu, and I am a first-year medical student. And my background was anthropology, creative writing, and African studies.
And I guess we should point out that Mbechi has not even really started med school yet. Well, you took part in the IMEI program. That's the Introduction to Medical Education at Iowa program.
Yes.
Is that right? So you have started. It's not fair of me to say that. You definitely have started.
I've gotten a taste.
You have. But we are recording this in August, so medical school is about to start in earnest.
Mm-hmm.
And and hopefully we've done some work to prepare you for that. I'm going to start off by saying that that about somewhere between 17 and 20% of our incoming class are from non-science backgrounds. When they come in, maybe they studied writing, maybe they studied art, maybe they studied history. All of those humanities programs they might have studied before coming in. And I imagine that making that transition can be difficult. Do any of you have any insight into how difficult that was, and you know what the pitfalls were? Abby, let's start with you.
Yeah. I think the challenge of being from a non-science background is that, I mean, everyone has the core classes, the prerequisites that you have to take before you start. But you often don't have those extra classes that kind of help you the first year. Like a lot of people had taken anatomy or physiology, had more biochemistry classes. So you sort of have to really jump in right away and figure out the best way that you study. And I think everyone struggles at some point in their medical education. Coming from a non-science background, you sort of hit that hurdle, I think, a little bit earlier.
How did hitting that hurdle manifest itself for you during the first 2 months, weeks and months of your time here?
I think you, at least for me, you realize you kind of have to change your study habits a little. For me, I think probably the biggest hurdle was focusing on sciences all the time. So we did have, you know, those prerequisite classes you have to take, but in undergrad, I also had all these other, like, really interesting classes that I was in, and I also had work, and I also had all these other activities, and so there was these multiple different parts of my life. And so for me, probably the biggest struggle the first couple years was having to focus on sciences and studying all the time. And in order to kind of get through that, I had to find time to incorporate other activities just to kind of give me that motivation, I guess, to keep going.
Yeah, well, that brings up an important point, and I think I've heard this a lot from people like you, the need to continue doing those things that you found valuable as somebody who wasn't in med school, to continue doing those things so that you you didn't go crazy. So I imagine, Sarah, that you have some something to say about that now that you're a second-year resident.
Yeah. I think I shared with Allison that sense of having to focus exclusively on the sciences being a challenge, coming from a background where there was more parts of my brain being stimulated and used on a daily basis. I felt, in a sense, that my brain was taken over by this sort of need to obsessively internalize biochemistry pathways and lists of body parts and things that could go wrong with them. And I did find that as a survival strategy, I fell back on some of my art practices as a way of engaging other parts of who I was, both physically. I took up contra dancing as a social activity. I took up street photography as a way of being out and engaging with people. So I shifted the art forms and the other kinds of activities that I engaged with to counterbalance the need to be so intellectually focused.
So these are more public activities, more social art activities.
Definitely. I became more interested in collaborative projects and in community-based art projects as opposed to a solitary studio practice, which had been the way I'd worked as an artist or as a writer before. I think one of the big challenges for me when I started taking science classes, even before engaging in actually being a medical student, was feeling like science was different from humanities. And one of the key breakthroughs that I felt I had as a pre-med student was that it's all language. And so to some extent, if you can approach the science as a language, it has its own syntax and vocabulary. And I think we divide them up artificially almost. And that helped me to get through.
So learning is learning, basically, is what you're saying. I mean,
organic chemistry has a language. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an alphabet. There's behaviors that are associated with each of the elements. And once you understand the core definitions and how things behave, you can play with them much like you play with grammar or syntax in poetry. It's a different story. It's a different way of interpreting things. But there are some core fundamental ways of using your brain that I found really interesting.
Mbechi, what were your fears in getting involved in this? Did you have any, or are you just one of those people who just jumps right in and does it and doesn't, you know, care? I mean,
oh no,
because I'm not one of those people.
I've always had a fear. I guess I chose to major in anthropology particularly because I thrive with diversity and, you know, diversity of experiences, diversity of interests. So, I mean, as I mentioned, I had like three different sort of main focuses during my undergraduate career. I was doing creative writing. I was also doing African studies, and they're very different. But then I was able to find commonalities in all of them. And then, you know, combined with my pre-med curriculum, you know, I felt sort of balanced. So, you know, as I was preparing for this experience at University of Iowa, I chose to do the IMEI program because I was a little bit nervous about now having to kind of be in this almost insular, socialized, sort of atmosphere where, you know, everybody kind of wants to do the same thing, almost kind of thinks similarly, or at least trying to learn the same exact thing at the same time. And so, you know, I've always been afraid of that. I'm always afraid to kind of be one of many instead of, you know, an individual. And I think it's important, maybe as an artist or as someone who's interested in culture, to recognize the differences in every limb, every artery, you know. And I guess.
Did you find during IMEI, well, I imagine in IMEI there are people who are there for different reasons. Do you expect to find a group of people who are all really just doing the same exact thing, or the same exact kind of person, or are you?
Well, you know.
Were any of those fears laid to rest or as part of your introduction to medical education?
I would say, everybody was definitely different. Everybody had different backgrounds, especially with IMEI, where you had, it was specifically geared towards non-traditional students. So you had people who were a little bit older, people who came from non-science backgrounds. But at the end of the day, they're all still working towards that same exact goal. You don't have anthropology majors. You don't have art history majors, you know. And it's, you know, and that's the field I want to enter. I mean, it's, you know, a profession. It's no longer in liberal arts. You know, I have to grow up, you know. And it's also important to see then that there is diversity in what brings people to medicine, or maybe the particular specialty they're interested in, or their learning styles, or what they find interesting about this particular organ and how they view it. And there's art in everything. So that fear has been laid to rest.
Well, that's good. Excellent. I mean, like, when fears are laid to rest. Sarah, you also have children. Mm-hmm. In fact, as you mentioned, you had a career, mm-hmm. And children before you came to this. What made you go, you know what? I'm gonna shake it all up and I'm gonna do this.
There were a lot of different factors. I think having children to begin with was a big sort of life-altering moment. And I think a lot of women have a big shift, and men too, when they have children. And so what mattered to me shifted a lot after I had kids. My kids were both very healthy. But
that's,
I think
it was... I just want to say that's interesting because I actually became less motivated after I had children. But a little tired, a little sleepy.
Well, yeah, I was very tired. I sort of felt like I lost my mind when I had my first kid, and then I sort of like repolarized after I had the second one. And we had a wonderful family physician. So as a young, healthy woman, I didn't have much interaction with the healthcare system. So my first real interaction with family doctors and with the healthcare system was after I had children. And it sort of shifted my awareness emotionally, but also intellectually. I learned more about what physicians did and all the different roles that they played. And I was very curious about it. And it took me a couple of years because I'd had plenty of education. It took me a little while to actually take the leap to a whole bunch more time in school learning. But I had a very encouraging family physician who I had some conversations with, and he was very encouraging to me, and he's still a mentor in my life. So after those conversations and a few years of thinking, I decided to take the organic chemistry and balance the equations and see what happened, and I got in. So here I am now.
Do any of you think that, I mean, I think you've touched on this already, but do you think that there are benefits to what you did before as a future or current physician? I mean, does that feed into, do you think these two lives are going to, and you think that first life is going to benefit the second life?
I mean, I think definitely that background that I had before medical school is always going to be a part of me, and it's always going to help. And for me with religious studies, like, I studied more about people and different cultures, and it definitely expanded my way of thinking, and I think it helps with interacting with patients. And so once you get out of the, you know, basic sciences, you know, core lecture years and into clinicals, then I think that background definitely comes out more and becomes more useful.
Yeah, I mean, it's my guess is that there's a reason that there's a relatively high percentage of people who don't necessarily come from a science background, and that's because, you know, we need those people in medicine. You know, those people bring some sort of balance to that. Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm new here, so I'm still kind of waiting for that moment when, you know, they say, yeah, and that's why we have an anthropology major here, you know? Like, we wouldn't have arrived at this cure without having, you know. At the end of the day, during the summer program, we had an opportunity to do simulated patient interviews, and I found that...
So these are, just for people who might not know, these are patients who are basically simulating different illnesses, mm-hmm. right, for yeah. medical students to
exactly.
try out their exam skills
exactly.
on, right?
And they're excellent actors. I mean, I had a patient who was actually writhing in pain and crying and, you know, and... I think when I didn't know how to do a physical exam, and I felt like, you know, yes, I could talk to the patient for as long as I wanted to. I mean, I could try to sympathize or empathize, or, you know, but at the end of the day, you still need to figure out what is wrong with that person. You know, you still have to give them a cure. I've watched a lot of TV, and I know that the patients are most frustrated when a doctor doesn't know, and yet we're humans. But I think, you know, we should also try our best not only to be, you know, nice, but also to be knowledgeable. So it does help to have, you know, a variety in your background, but I think after a while you have to, you know, focus on the medicine.
Spoken like a true true first year, ready to jump into the sciences.
At least that's what I guess it was drummed into me this summer, man.
Come back to the other side of your brain in a couple of years.
Yeah, I hope.
I think, as we've said, it seems kind of important to keep that other part of you alive, mm-hmm. at least.
At least, it's
a little ember in the back of your head for a while until mm-hmm. until you can you feel like you can afford to let that out again. That makes sense to me. But when you contemplate the future, when you contemplate the path that your life will take, what do you anticipate happening in terms of the art, the humanities, the especially you, I mean, not especially you, but you, Sarah, you know, you have this, you know, very, you know, serious artistic background.
Yeah.
Are you going to do something professionally with the art? Are you going to just be a physician? I mean, what's your ultimate goal, do you think?
I have been very actively practicing as an artist as well as a physician over the last couple of years.
So we're not even talking about future. I mean, this is what you're doing.
No, I am actively combining both of those things, and I was hoping through medical school to be able to keep that part of myself alive, you know, in quotes. And I wasn't sure if when I went to medical school I would be sacrificing my art and time for it completely to this other activity. And I was very fortunate at SUNY Upstate to be supported by the Department of Bioethics and Humanities there to continue writing and pursuing my art. And in this last year, I did a very significant community-based photography project that was a collaboration with a number of nonprofits in the neighborhood around the hospital where I worked as an intern at St. Joseph's Hospital. And in a sense, I feel like some of the community-based art that I do is as much a healing practice in a community setting as the medicine that I practice in the hospital when I was administering drugs and writing orders and working with attendings in terms of what the broader concept of medicine is, improving the health and well-being of people from curing their infections to dealing with their social issues. And I think that because I have the background that I have, I approach the practice of medicine in a non-traditional way, and it includes my art practice for me. And I don't get paid to do the art. Maybe a little bit. Once in a while I get a grant or I get a small fee for it. But it's as important to me as the job that I do for pay as a resident here. So one of the things that surprised me as an intern last year, because I had spent all this time doing science and then you do your clinicals and then you get into the hospital and you're like actually writing orders, and you realize that so much of what goes on in the hospital isn't just the science. There's like a ton of what needs to be done for patients is about their home situation and their insurance and the anxiety that the family is having and their religious background and the language that they speak or don't speak and their recent immigrants. And there's just a ton of activities that physicians engage in that draw on all these other parts of your brain that aren't what you're being tested on in medical school at all. And so I think having a background in religious studies or in anthropology helps you to integrate ultimately. Like, we're not tested on that stuff in medical school for the most part. A little bit, tiny little bit in cultural sensitivity training and things like that. But in the hospital, it really comes into play in a dramatic way. And I think the people who are just science background oriented have a harder time transitioning to those other non-science tasks again.
You know, one of the things that struck me when I first came to Iowa was the hospital and the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics and their rather obvious commitment to art.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who aren't aware, the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics has a program called Project Art. And because apparently there's a law in the state of Iowa that says a certain amount of your budget has to be, in a public building must be expended buying art, putting art up on the walls. And I think I have that right. It seems rather unlikely to me that this would be the case, but it is. And what they've done is they've amassed a rather large collection of art. And I'm assuming that one reason that they've done that in such an obvious way is because they think it's good for the patients and probably the staff as well. I mean, have you seen this? Have you noticed this, Betsy? What do you think about this when you walk through this hospital and see what is an incredible collection?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I love going to the hospital. And actually, I was born in Iowa, so I remember going to see my pediatrician through those halls. And I remember, during my tours and just my wandering, seeing those same, sculptures. Or I remember there's like a dollhouse somewhere. There's a roller skate made from beads. And I remember those from my childhood. So, I mean, those definitely resonate with patients, even if you're not sick or even if you don't think you're noticing those things. I mean, at this age, I moved to New Jersey, how many years ago? Over 10 years ago. And I still remember those things now. So I think it's invaluable that it's there. And I think it cheers the place up immensely.
I heard that, there's a great big blue bowl. Everybody knows about the great big blue bowl. It's an etched a large etched bowl. It's probably a few feet across. I mean, it's gigantic. And what I heard from the project art people is that when they take it away to clean it or something, the patients clamor for it back. And I think that says a lot about what gets people through those times when they have to be in the hospital or when a loved one has to be in the hospital. I mean, this is somehow important to them. I just think that's kind of an interesting idea.
I have to confess that my daughter was born here. Mm. And coming to the hospital here and having the art experience in the hospital, as somebody who had been to a lot of museums, seeing art in the setting of the hospital shifted my perspective on the role of art in the world. Mm. And had a really profound impact on me in terms of thinking about where art should be.
I don't think it would have occurred to a lot of people that, you know, art belongs in a hospital, but mm-hmm.
And it's a democratic space is yeah. the way I think of it. It's a space where everybody ends up. It doesn't matter if you're Bill Clinton having a heart attack or, you know, some old Iowan farmer who never rubbed elbows with anybody politically important or whatever, and you get to experience that same beauty.
Right.
I think it matters.
Right. Well, I want to thank you all for joining me today. It's been a great discussion, and I hope you'll join us again sometime for another conversation. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
This is CECOM Executive Secretary Kristen Gerjevic reporting student government news from Council of Iowa. CECOM student government held its first meeting this past week on Tuesday, August 23rd. On the agenda, medical student grant rounds, org sync, and student government grants for CECOM organizations, as well as upcoming events. Medical students grand rounds will feature an M3 and ORM4 who will present a case in conjunction with a basic scientist and clinician to integrate basic science concepts, evidence-based medicine, and best practices. This is a new program this year, and dates and times have not yet been announced. OrgSync is a new program that encourages organizations to help manage their funds in communication. There's been a university-wide movement toward the program, and student government is offering a grant opportunity when student organizations join. Each organization is eligible to request funds through a one-time grant application to a maximum of $75. More information will be available. Informational sessions for OrgSync will be held at MRF on Monday, August 29th from 12:30 to 1:30, and Thursday, August 2nd from 4 to 5. Upcoming events of the All Community Student Government Picnic is Friday, August 26th from 5:30 to 7:30 at Upper City Park. The new event, the Medical Student Garage Sale, is currently being organized to help offset the rising cost of frolic. Students and others are welcome to donate gently used items as well as shop. While this event is currently being organized, more information will be available this fall. And finally, an amended constitution will be up for vote by the student body this fall, as well as election of M1 representatives to the Medical Arts and Science Committee and Caduceus. This has been your student government news.
Thanks for listening to The Short Coat. The Short Coat is produced by the Writing and Humanities Program at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, with support from Medical Student Government. You can visit us online at theshortcoat.com, you can find us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we're known as The Short Coat. We also take comments and story ideas and the occasional rant from you, our listeners, via email at theshortcoats@gmail.com, or leave us a message at 347-SHORT-CT, that's 347-746-7828. That's also where you can submit a question for our advice segment, The Short Couch. The executive producers are Jason T. Lewis and David T. Etler. Our theme music is by Revolution Void from the album Increase the Dosage. Find them at www.revolutionvoid.com.